Hi, Broadway people. We are back for another week of Broadway Breakdown here on Popcorn Talk Network. This week we are talking The King and I film discussion, so stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
Whenever I feel afraid.
Just going along with this.
There's like not enough whistling in the song to me.
I know, they whistle at the end.
Right.
And that's kind of it.
I feel like it's because the actors can't whistle.
Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy and a few words to show.
That was Ben Bateman. Hey, Ben, what's going on? I'm just kidding. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our show, Broadway Breakdown. This week, like I said, we're discussing King and I, the film. Last week, we discussed the theater discussion. And me and Jackie both had not watched this film since we were children, so
yes.
We both got a redo in it.
Yeah, it was, we both had different thoughts looking at it as adults. I mean, I had seen the touring cast, and because this was made in the 50s, there are some things left in that I think it seems like they kind of edited out the mm-hmm. touring cast. But as an adult, like, I can remember thinking their relationship was so romantic, and you're looking at it now, or as a kid I thought their relationship was so romantic, and then you're looking at it as an adult and you're like, he's saying some really sexist things to her, and then they start dancing.
Yeah, and they don't really have much of a romance. Most of it's just her yelling at him or him yelling at her. It's a very
yes.
unhealthy relationship because both of them feel they're the right ones.
I feel like there are, you know, romantic undertones in place, like when he hands her the ring and that moment when she gets really breathless when they're dancing. But still, you're like, he says some things to her that are just not, I mean, and of course it's the time period too, you know, but you're, as a modern woman, you're like, that wasn't cool. That wasn't cool.
Well, we're going to get into all of it. Before we do that, let me introduce myself. I am Brianna Phipps. I will be your host today, and you can find me at bphipps14 on Twitter and Instagram, bphipps1214 on Snapchat. And I'm joined by the lovely Jackie.
I'm 123 Jackie B on all platforms, except for Snapchat, where I'm Jackie B123.
And we, of course, have our great, lovely musical goddess in the booth with us today, Alexis Torres. Where can they find you?
What up? You can find me all over social media at atorres890.
So like I said, this was my first time watching this film, and I truly didn't remember most of it because I remember being young and just not wanting to watch it. Like, my mom would put it on and I was like, this is boring. Why
yeah,
are we
you
watching
and I were
this?
Saying that we felt like this movie was so long when we were kids. It's only like 2 hours and 15 minutes.
I mean, that is long. Like, let's not fool ourselves. 2 hours
but
is a long
film. But it's shorter than The Sound
but,
of Music, which
yes.
we didn't think was that long as kids.
Yes. So, you know, and growing up and watching it now, I did definitely have different takeaways, and I did enjoy the film more as an adult than I did as a child.
I think as an adult, you're able to comprehend the politics that are happening, whereas you're a kid.
When you're able to understand more of what's going on, even
yeah.
just when he's talking or she's talking about these different things. Like, as a kid, like, you don't understand, like, I don't understand why he has multiple wives. I don't understand why he's saying this or why he would act like that.
Or right, or I don't understand that. Why the British people are being mean to him. It's
yeah.
like there are things that sadly you learn as an adult that make this, you know.
Yeah, it's like as a kid you're like, I don't understand why she wouldn't want to live in the palace or
right.
like stuff like that. Like, even like it made so much more sense now than it
right.
did then. I was like, you get to live in a palace, lady. Like, why are you complaining?
Yeah,
but you know. I also do find it interesting that they don't, and then do they do it in the musical? Do they mention her daughter at all? Or is her daughter not mentioned in the musical either? Is
not
it just
that
her
I
son?
Can recall, no.
Yeah, they kind of just, because in the real life she had a daughter, she just stayed back in England. But they just kind of.
I feel it's part of the play/movie magic. I did read, though, that.
I think it would have been nice, though, to have that, like, you know, she's in this new country and she's learning these new customs and this new way of doing things. And also, like, having that heartache of not having your child with you. I think that would have added a little bit to it.
I think they try to do that with the both the scene with her about her, where she sings about her husband, and then also the scene where she's meeting with the British guy that she knew before from England. I think they try to show that, like, sort of homesickness with mm-hmm. that juxtaposition.
Well, Deborah Kerr played the role of Anna in this film, and she wasn't originally considered for the role. It was originally considered for Dinah Shore, And then Maureen O'Hara was originally casted, but Richard Rodgers didn't like that casting. And so Yul Brynner was the one that actually got Deborah Kerr cast. And it's just a little bit like, you know, it's like we always talk about them casting people that can't sing, and we're going to get into that later, but both of these other actresses could sing.
Right.
And were known to sing.
Right, and Deborah Kerr has a singing double, which is interesting to me because the same woman, Marnie Noxon, who wrote for Buffy, Marnie Noxon, who was her voice double for this, was also her voice double for An Affair to Remember.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, it's like, why are you choosing people who can't sing? But whatever.
It all goes back to that, like, you know, back then they like had that star vehicle and we need to put
right,
this star
right.
in.
It's the Hollywood magic. It's the casting Audrey Hepburn in a role where she can't sing, you know.
Yeah, it happened so much back then. Although I will say, like, in a perfect world I want someone to be cast that can sing. But if I had only the choice of someone that couldn't sing and having someone that couldn't sing and have a voice over person, I'd rather have the voiceover person, because nowadays when they don't do that and they just still hire the people that can't sing.
Are you thinking of Pierce Brosnan again?
I am.
Because I think we all are.
I think we're all thinking of Pierce Brosnan.
As we love you, Pierce Brosnan. That, you know, your face is handsome. Your singing voice, not
you
so
were amazing
much.
As James Bond. And in Mrs. Doubtfire, great work.
Just
maybe take a break from the musicals. But even other people that like are just okay singers and stuff, like if we're gonna like have only that two choices, like at least just pay someone else a bunch of money and let them sing that and have us hear something nice.
Yeah, but I mean I feel like Hollywood even today is still relying on that star vehicle, and it's slowly starting to learn that people just want quality stories and actors who can play the roles rather than just paying money to see a star. That's not as much a thing anymore.
Yeah.
People are like, well, you know, I want to see somebody who looks like this character, acts like this character. I mean, when you look at the new Star Wars film, not Rogue One, but the episode 7,
one.
Yeah, the one where they cast Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, they were, John Boyega kind of known, but Daisy Ridley complete unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have actors like that who just do their job so well that it doesn't even matter, and they're part of a big franchise, which I guess helps.
I mean, and Deborah Kerr did do a good job. She by no means didn't do a good job with the acting portrayal of this. It's still like, I just don't understand. Like, there's so many talented people that can sing. Like, why not hire one of them?
Right. It's the old Broadway thing where you want to see the people who can do those things be awarded for doing them.
Like, I can go up and lip sync
right?
film. You can pay me a bunch of money. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, it's kind of true in this whole film because we have these people. There's three different people that didn't sing their own roles.
Yes.
Which I wrote down. We had
Rita Moreno, mm-hmm. who plays Tuptim, which that's interesting because she achieved EGOT. Her Tony was for a non-singing role.
Mm-hmm.
She really is not a singer. But
she was also in West Side Story.
Also in West Side Story. It's really fat because she's a great actress. Phenomenal yes. actress. But it's just fascinating to me that it's like she's not really known as a singer, but then she's been associated with these singing things.
And then Lunta didn't sing. They had Ruben Fuentes sing for him.
Yes.
And then, so it's like we have this film where we have all these people, not all these people, but like these three people that are cast that aren't singers with people to sing for them, and then we have all these people cast who aren't Asian and are just trying to pass them for Asian, who some of them have, like you mentioned the one guy who has a completely Hispanic accent.
Yeah, what's his name? The guy who played Lunta.
Yeah.
His name is... I wrote it down.
Up
Carlos Rivas? Rivas?
Yes, Rivas? Carlos Rivas.
Rivas? Yeah, he definitely has a Hispanic accent.
Well, he was...
From Texas. His mother was Mexican, his father was German. And I don't know, like, again, I don't know this actor well enough to know if, like, he does have an Hispanic accent in general, or if, like, the only accent he could come up with because of his family was a Hispanic accent. I don't know. But it was very clear to me when he was singing, I was like, or speaking, not singing, speaking, that I was like, this guy, like, this accent is a Hispanic accent. It's not very pronounced, but, like, the way he's pronouncing things is... It's not the same as, like,
the other actors, yeah.
You know?
And that one is one thing that takes me out of film a little bit, is, like, one, we're supposed to be set in this place, but we have all of these different nationalities living in this place, because we have Latin people, we have the Filipino, we have Asian, like white.
And then you had, I mean, we talked about this last week, where you have Rodgers and Hammerstein set up this rule where it's like, okay, we're not going to completely mimic a Thai accent, but we're going to set this staccato way of speaking that might read to a Western audience. But it's like, even if you don't have all of the actors doing it, it does kind of remove you from that.
It happens all the time in other films, like non-musical films, too, and stuff.
Oh, my gosh, that one, Alexander or whatever it was, where everybody had a different accent. I was like, I don't understand.
It's like, I would rather have something like Les Mis, where I know it takes place in France, and obviously they're not... they don't have French accents. They're not
speaking
French.
But they're all British, and that's okay.
But yeah, but like, for some reason for me, like, exactly, they're all British, so I was okay with
it. Right, right, exactly.
Because at least they all have the same accent.
You're like, some of them are Cockney, some of them are high British, but it's fine. They're all British. We've accepted this.
But like, yeah, when you have... Oh, we all live in this one same area. We all grew up together, but we all have extremely different accents, but we're all the same, like, nationalities. Not because we're different nationalities. Then it does kind of take me out of it a little bit.
Right.
Because I'm, like, just confused.
And it's interesting in this play because they've already explained to you that, you know, I speak English and this is why, because I studied it. Or I speak English. You have various characters saying while they're speaking English. So we already have this, it's not even like the movies nowadays where people are speaking English, but you're like mentally supposed to understand they're all speaking a different language. Mm-hmm. Here, it's established that these characters learned English. So it's not even that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It was a weird casting choice, so that's all I'll say.
Right.
Some of the choices. Like, not that they're not good actors, just weird for
these And not roles. That Yul Brynner isn't super hot. He's just not Asian.
Yeah.
I mean...
Like you said, when that whole scene happened with the whip
shirt,
you were totally...
I was like, oh my gosh, Yul Brynner is shirtless with a whip, and this is not what I'm supposed to be thinking in this scene, but it's really attractive.
I do want to talk about some of the differences that they have in between the movie and the film, and I know there's not a ton... and I know you can speak a little bit more towards the show and what differences they have in the show that they didn't have in the film or that they did have in the film. What did you notice, like, kind of overall?
Overall, it's pretty faithful, but obviously they cut musical numbers.
Mm-hmm. They took out My Lord and Master, The Royal Bangkok Academy, A Puzzlement Reprise, Shall I Tell You What I Think of You, Western People Funny, I Have Dreamed, Hello... Hello Young Lovers Reprise, I Whistle Happy Tune Reprise. So they took out quite a lot of songs. I mean, a lot of them are reprises, but...
And you have this scene, I did notice... I mean, I noticed, like, little, just little things, and I wonder if that's because, you know, I saw a contemporary touring show versus this movie was from 1956, so there are certain changes that are made, but... You get a brief mention in the touring show... of her reading the book, and you kind of like the Uncle Tom's Cabin, and there's not much said about it, and then they do the number, and the point of the number more so in the touring cast is to really cement in your mind that Tup Tim is like making the statement that I don't want to be a slave, you know, and you're doing this to me. Here in the movie, there's also this like grandiose statement made about like Lincoln and slavery and all this, which she still has this like letter to Lincoln in the play, but there's not really, you don't really have as much of that moment with her explaining the book, and which she does in the movie. She really like explains like this is like Harry Beecher Stowe and blah blah
blah.
Yeah,
they go very into it.
And I feel like that's because we understand now, and again, I said this last week, we understand now that that book, while at the time was making a case against slavery, we know that it uses harmful stereotypes to make that case. Mm-hmm. And so there's this, I feel like there was this modern drawback to be like, okay, we can't rely on that as much because we don't want to reinforce harmful stereotypes.
And it doesn't add or take away, I don't think, to not have it be as described as they do in the film. Like, you still have the play, and the play still gets that
point
across.
Yes, and the play is more, when you're watching it, I mean, even here, you know, you have costumes that are not indicative of it being, like, a Western, you don't have them wearing Western dress or anything like that. But I feel like more so in the play, the whole point that they're drawing is that, you know, she's being treated like a slave and she wants to make a statement against that. Mm-hmm.
And also just the whole thing of that you see all these people in this country and even that are against slavery, but then you see all the people, like even the prince who comes up and says, like, but you say that this law would pass and what if I don't want it to?
Right.
And she's like, you know, it's not always about what we want. It's right. about what's right. And
right.
it's hard when you have a society that, like, that's all they know. Right. And they don't view it as, like, we're doing something wrong to people. It's like, this is just how life is. To try to tell them what you're doing is wrong, it's a really hard thing to try to get through because when that's all you know, it is. It's like, what do you mean it's wrong?
Right. Right.
So, I mean, I think the play itself in the movie is beautiful with the costumings and the dancing and
the costumes. I know it won an Academy Award for its costumes, but I was not crazy about these really? Costumes. And I think that's because in the 50s and 60s, they had this whole thing where it was like, we shall add all the colors. And I feel like because it was this age of, like, really trying to, like, wow you, they almost overdid it. In a lot of films, like, think about Cleopatra, you know.
Yeah, but I still really enjoyed all the costumes in this. Like, I could see what you mean by saying some parts of it are overdone, but I still enjoyed looking at them just because of the detail that was put in. Because I feel like people don't do that as much anymore with detail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people, like, instead of making costumes for films nowadays, we go and we look and buy pieces and put them together for costuming. I mean, not to say that certain films don't, but just back then there was that more attention, I think, and they did really take their time with stuff to, like, make it extravagant.
For me, I think the thing I responded to in the costumes for the play, again, you can't have these, like, numerous costume changes that they have in the movie. So you have the king basically wearing, like, one outfit. I mean, he might wear, like, a little bit of a change when he has the British people coming over, but it's pretty much consistently yeah. one outfit. And they have these, like, reds and purples and blues, and so it's kept in this same, like, relative color family that also matches the set. And it was something to me very pleasing because everything was in harmony, whereas the set here is that, like, 50s and 60s, like, jarring, like, gold, it's a palace, we have to make it look like a palace, so everything is gold, and everybody is wearing, like, every fabulous color they've ever seen. So it was a bit much on my eyes because I like the more, like, harmonious yeah. color schemes.
I will say for the costuming that the scene where he says that she has to kneel if he kneels or sit if he sits or lay down.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted her to bring up, like, look at what I'm wearing. It's not as simple for me to sit down. And they never did. And I was like, why aren't you saying this?
That's the whole point of that scene, though, because even when you're watching it as a person, that's what you're thinking when you're looking at her outfit. And it's interesting you bring that up because the actress herself lost weight because she was sweating in that dress. And the dresses she wore were like 30 to 40 pounds. And she would get...
They looked heavy.
Yeah, she would get bruised when she did those things like lay on the floor and everything because you've got this like construction around you. And so it was a very burdensome costume.
Yeah, and like when she sits down and a cup kicks out around her, like
right.
it looks really like fluffy and like I want to sit on that dress, but
right.
I know that it's very uncomfortable for her yeah. to be sitting down like that. Speaking of the costuming winning, though, like this play, or play, movie, was nominated for 9 Tony Awards and won 5. So it did very well. I mean, Tony, I keep doing
Academy
this.
Awards. It's
Academy
okay.
Awards.
It won a lot of Tonys, too.
It did. You know, they're all awards. You get a statue. No. But yeah, so it got nominated for 9 Academy Awards and won 5 Academy Awards for Best Actor for Yul Brynner, for Best Art Direction, Costume Design, Music Scoring of a Musical Picture, and Sound Recording.
And then Deborah Kerr was nominated but didn't win. I read somewhere Deborah that Kerr she had been nominated like a bunch of times but never won.
Yeah, for the Golden Globes, I think she was also nominated and for like the Drama Desk Award or something
yeah.
like that. It was nominated also
No,
for,
but I mean just in general for Academy
oh, in life,
Awards.
Just in life?
Yeah, in life. I think she had been nominated for something like 6 Academy Awards but never won, ugh. Which is like, at the time it was the most an actress has been nominated without winning.
Well, and like, during that time period, I know a lot of actors felt like that they didn't win. When they did win, they didn't win for roles that they thought they should have won for.
Yeah.
Like, I know when John Wayne got his, he was like, I feel like I got this because I'm dying. And not because
we still do that, though. It's like Leo Dio should have gotten an Academy Award a long time ago. But, you know, it's that who are you up against? Is the person you're up against, like, more likely to win this year or whatever?
There's a lot of politics.
Yeah, there's a lot of politics. But and people still saw Leo Dio for the longest time as a heartthrob. But I know that's a side story.
It was also nominated for Best Picture, like you said, Best Actress, and Best Director, Best Cinematography.
And there was an animated musical, which I've never seen. It was released in 1999. But mm-hmm. if you guys have seen it, tell us about it.
There's a lot of renditions of it. Because there's like three, I think, non-musical adaption films of this.
Yeah, there's the one that Jodie Foster
was Anna in. Anna and the King.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, because when I kept trying to look up differences between the two, that's what it kept showing me was the musical and Anna and the King. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm asking you. But this movie really, like, the takeoff from it more than anything else was its music and the soundtrack, because the soundtrack went, like, viral for, if it was today's standards, like, it went viral.
Right.
It was topping the charts for 3 years. I wrote those down. It was 1956, 7, and 8.
But they cut out Top 10 Solo, which I was so bummed about. She's my favorite character.
For the soundtrack, they added back in three of the songs. I'm trying to think if any of them were her solo.
I know, but I know they. I think it was one of the ones that they added in for the
My
soundtrack.
Lord and Master.
Yeah, but
they
added
in My Lord and Master.
But I liked it in the play.
Well, you know, sometimes mistakes happen.
Sometimes people remove things you like.
I mean, also, I think a large number of the music was removed in general because they didn't have the people singing their own songs, and so like. Deborah Kerr, I think they took out a good number of songs that she sings because they were like...
But I also think it was for time, because I was reading somewhere that, you know, if they felt that this song was expendable or this song didn't help further the character, they would just
When you're already... The cut's already 2 hours and 10 or 13 minutes, whatever it is. And if they kept all those songs in, then we would have had a 3 hour long movie.
Right.
And sometimes it does make it feel drawn out in a film when you add too much in, because you're just, it doesn't translate as well as it does in the stage.
It's just interesting to me that they were looking to be time conservative, I suppose, when, you know, you have, it's not necessarily the history of film to be time conservative. Like, think of Gone with the Wind is like 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And that was in 1949, I think. I think it was 1949. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But, like, you look at the history of film and you have these, like, epic, long movies. And all of a sudden, they're suddenly like, oh, we got to do this for time. Which is interesting, because then they had to go back and reshoot. And they decided they wanted to add stuff. And so they just wasted, like, something like $400,000 doing reshoots. Because they were trying to be too time conservative.
It's the backwards way of the film industry.
Right, right.
We over,
bleeding money when you can.
Well, and it is, like, sometimes, like, you know, especially with musicals, because it is hard to adapt them sometimes to a movie, and they try, and sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you, like, you take out these songs that people have grown to know and love, and they want those songs in there. People that have never known the theater show maybe come and watch it, and they're fine with it, because they don't know that song's missing. But to you, it's something you grew up with, it's something that you've grown to love, and you're like, why is my favorite song taken out?
Right.
And then when they add other things in, like you said, like, then you just feel cheated, because you're like, they took out something that I love and they put in something that doesn't matter because it wasn't in the show. But
there is something I appreciated, though, about seeing this as a movie. If we're talking about the difference between, like, stage and film, it's the moving shots. You have these at the dinner party. You have this shot of him starting in one room, following him into the dining hall, and then you have this, like, big wide shot of the table. So you have these moments that you can do these moving shots. The same thing when she first comes in to see him in the ballroom area, I guess it is, mm-hmm. or the throne room, and she sort of is at one end and he's at the other, and then they move together and then they move over to the side. It's this beautiful choreography with the camera that you can't, you're limited to on stage that mm-hmm. I felt that they made good use of for this film.
And that's what you kind of have to do when you're making a movie up based off a musical. You have to figure out what you can do that will add to it that it can't be done on stage. Because that's right. what's going to make people like it, is because if I'm just watching basically the same thing that's on stage, but you've taken out things or added things in that I didn't want, then I'm going to be a lot more upset than if you like made it something different that I couldn't see on stage.
Right. I feel like the Rent movie does that, which we'll talk about where Rent's coming up next. Yes. So we'll be able to talk about that in the next couple of weeks.
Yes. There's actually quite a few movie musicals that I think do a really good job of it. And then there's a few that I think do a very terrible job.
Right. Right. There's some of them where you are like, no, this was just better on stage. I don't know what you're doing.
But I do know, and I know we started a little late today, but we are running low on time. So I'm going to say that that's about it for our discussion of the movie, unless you have anything you wanted to add before we end that and move into our news section.
No, the only thing I want to add is what struck me when I was watching the movie, the moment that struck me was when he says, and again, this has to do with like filming on a set. I don't think there's no like difference on the set between you're in the library and you're over here. So they want to move him from the library when he's dying. And he says, no, I want to be in here in the room with the knowledge. And that just, like, I was like, oh, this is, he wants so much for his country to be, like, full of these, like, scientists and learned people. And I just really love that, and I respected that. And it's not a moment, again, that you can have on stage, because you'd have to wheel in, like, bookcases to show that this is where you are, you mm-hmm. know? So.
Yeah, I mean, I loved his character's evolution throughout the film. Like, you know, and I think it played true to real life, where some things he didn't really change on, because you don't just magically become this whole new person that's like, yes, everything that I've been saying is wrong. Right. But he did, like, accept faults when he could, and then...
Right. And, of course, I would love to have more... I would love to have actual Asian actors playing those roles, but this being Hollywood at the time, they just did not do that, and thankfully they're getting better these days about mm-hmm. understanding that people will come see you
regardless,
you know.
But yeah, so we'll end it there for the movie of The King and I. I know it's in Cleveland right now. I don't know where it's going next, but if you guys get a chance to go to the tour, I didn't get a chance to see it, unfortunately, but Jackie did, and everyone I know that saw it said it's amazing, so definitely take time and go see that if you can. But so moving on to our news, I'm going to start with a couple videos that we posted just because they happened.
Yeah.
So at the Super Bowl.
Because they happen and they're great.
So we talked a lot last week about the Super Bowl, and I was mistaken because I thought the Skylar sisters were performing during halftime, but they weren't. They were performing in the beginning singing America the Beautiful, right? Yes. So we have a video of them singing that at the Super Bowl to start kind of off. So, you know, you can incorporate theater in Super Bowl. You can love sports.
I think Lady Gaga's super theatrical, too. So I felt like with the entertainment part of the Super Bowl, I was pleased.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, shed his grace and crown thy good with brotherhood and sisterhood. From sea to shining sea, from sea to shining sea, to shining sea.
I love it. It's just them
harmonizing. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just them proving that they're extremely good at what they do.
And I like that it gave Peggy a little bit more of a part that she gets. I mean, I know she's also another part in
that
show.
I always feel like, did you ever see the SNL skit with, like, the sisters, and then Kristen Wiig plays that one with, like, the big forehead and the baby hands, and she's like, and I'm Dulene. Like, I always feel like Peggy was given that role, and
it's just,
unfortunately, because she clearly has an amazing voice, and she's a good actress.
I'm glad that at least she gets to come back in the second act as a different character.
Right.
But it's just, like, when you're listening to that song, and they're just, like, singing.
You, like, feel Peggy. Right. I feel like Peggy got the Dulene role, and I'm like, why is Peggy Dulene? Can we give Peggy a little bit of something else?
Yeah, so I'm glad, like, I like seeing her there and getting to see her portray her voice more so along with her sisters.
Right.
And then our second one, we put it up on our Twitter and our Facebook, but I did want to, for those of you that maybe haven't seen it yet, if you're living under a rock, because I think everyone's seen it, but they released Jake Gyllenhaal singing Finishing the Hat, or he released it to his Facebook. So we're going to play that video for you guys as well. This is a little kind of first taste of what is to come.
I want Jake Gyllenhaal to do musical movies. Why is he not doing that, Jake Gyllenhaal?
Well, they're remaking Little Shop of Horrors. He did already play Seymour. He's kind of old, I guess, to play that.
So. Let's try from the top, everybody. Here we go.
I don't know. Rick Moranis. How old is Rick Moranis when he played
that? That's true. He wasn't that young.
Or Rick Moranis always looks old to me, even when he's supposed to be young.
Like, someone posted, like, that he made his Broadway debut in this, and I was like, no, he was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Looks for me. Bonnet flapping, yapping, roof, chicken, pastry. Yes, she looks for me. Good. Let her look for me to tell me why she left me, as I always knew she would. I had thought she understood.
And I love this moving shot. I always love moving shots.
It's very, like, I feel like I'm watching a film right now.
Yeah.
Even with the shadowings coming down off the stairs.
Jake Gyllenhaal do a musical movie.
Finishing well, maybe they'll make Sunday in the Park with George a film.
Yes.
How you have to finish the hat. How you watch the rest of the world.
It's just so funny because listening to this song, it just reminds me so much of Into the Woods.
I was just going to say that. It really does.
And I know they're both Stephen's songs.
Right.
What it feels like planning a sky. What you feel when voices that come through the window go until they distance and die.
This is why he's, like, in such good shape. Look at how many stairs he has to go.
He's doing that every day, singing, walking up and down the stairs.
Yeah, that's a great way. Yeah. You gotta just practice singing.
Yeah.
Find a way to exercise while you do it. Why not?
The kind that you want to find waiting to return you to the night. Dizzy from the
I do feel like
he should have been in the Into the Woods movie.
He would have been good in that. I feel like this style of singing suits his voice a lot better than when I heard him in Little Shop of Horrors, though.
Yeah.
Reaching to the world of the hat like a window. Yeah, I feel like he's more of a ballad kind of guy than a, you know, something staccato and everything. So
studying a face, stepping back to look at a face. Leaves a little space.
They should do Bubble Boy the musical so he can, like, reprise that role, but then make
amazing.
It a musical.
I'm down.
Somebody give me a piece of the credit for that.
I thought you were going to say Donnie Darko instead of Bubble Boy.
You thought I was going to say something reasonable and sensible, which is not what I was going to say. My favorite Jake Gyllenhaal movie is Bubble Boy, and you are free to judge me.
There's nothing wrong with that. Bubble Boy is awesome.
Mine's October Sky, and you know what? I would totally go see an October Sky musical.
That you could take Neil with you, he'll just cry with you the entire time.
Just every movie you've ever made, Jake, just turn it into a musical and redo it.
Donnie Darko the musical would be good, too, I feel.
Yeah.
Because I want to see that, like, weird, creepy bunny character, like, dancing around in between numbers. Make it happen.
I just want it to have its own song.
That's true.
The bunny has its own
song. You guys, tweet at us. You know, tweet at the Broadway at Broadway Bedown and let us know what movie that hasn't been made into a musical that you would like to see be made into a musical.
Yes. That's going to be a great performance. If you get a chance, and if you're in New York to go see that, I know it's like a 10-week engagement, but I think based off that, it's worth going. So
exactly.
I want to go over a couple more stories before we have to end it here. For anyone that's interested for a cabaret or is coming to their town, we're going to have a new MC and Sally Bowles. Sally Bowles actually already did take over, and that's Leanne Larkin, who is best known recently for playing Gypsy at Dainty June and Gypsy. She took over on February 7th. And then John Peterson, who's also been, he's played the MC before for Roundabout, will be taking over the MC starting on February 21st. That musical is in Chicago right now, and that's moving to Milwaukee on February 23rd. So definitely check it out. We both saw it while it was here. It's a great production.
So good. So good.
Yeah, it's definitely worth going to see. Some random news. Andrew Lloyd Webber released a free emoji pack based off his musicals.
We'll check that out.
Yeah, we'll put the link up to download it. But yeah, if you want some, you know, cats or Phantom of the Opera emojis.
I am so going to use Phantom of the Opera emojis.
So those are
half
free.
Half mask. Keep pushing that button.
They're free. And yeah, so, you know, go check out Andrew Lloyd Webber's free emojis and download them for your phone so you can just tweet random different things at people. Or
I'm just gonna text you a bunch of cats. Just a bunch of cats. And I'm just gonna be like, are these Jellicle for you?
Are they something like that?
I'm totally on board with this though. I think let's have more composers make emoji packs.
Yeah.
Just so I don't have to type ever.
I mean,
ever.
Where are the Hamilton emoji packs?
Yeah. I don't want to have that to type ever. I just want to tell you exactly what's going on in my life through musical emojis.
Right, exactly.
Just don't use the Sweeney Todd one.
Oh Jesus. knife. What are you trying to say to me?
I'm saying you're killer.
The pun. Amy Poehler is working on a dark comedy for HBO. It's going to be entitled Ed Edison. It's going to star John Roberts, who is currently the voice of Linda Belker. You watch Bob's Burgers, Alexis, am I saying that right? Belker? No, she's not there right now. But
I don't watch it either. Otherwise,
Linda on Bob's Burgers. He does the voice for her, but he's going to be starring in it, and he co-wrote it. It's based loosely on his own life. It's going to follow him, and he's a 40-year-old real estate broker who dreams of living life in the big city but remains stuck in his small hometown of Edison, New Jersey.
Interesting. Yeah. It does sound interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they incorporate the songs into it.
Yeah.
If it's going to be something where it's like Glee, where they just start singing and everyone knows they're singing, or is it like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend where it's in his head?
Right.
But I'm happy they're doing like a dark comedy because I like those kind of darker songs too. And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I love it, and they do have dark songs, but it is much more comedy-based.
Well, that's why I liked the... Glee started to get away from that, but in the first season of Glee, it was pretty darn dark, and I really enjoyed that.
So that's, I don't know when that, they don't have a date yet for that, maybe next season, I'm not sure, but definitely check that out, it seems interesting, and Amy Poehler, I know, is a big musical lover, so I think she'll do a good job translating that. Freaky Friday released their digital recording of their soundtrack.
Nice.
On the 10th. The physical CDs will be available starting March 17th. That music was written by... Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkie, who wrote for Next to Normal, which I love the music in Next to Normal. But I don't know. Like, it's very different from, like, Freaky Friday, like, story-wise. But
right.
I'm interested to hear it. I haven't listened to it yet. But that's available anywhere digitally that you can find it right now. And then, like I said, the CDs will become available March 17th. BuzzFeed did name it one of the best musicals of 2016. So definitely check that out. Let us know what you guys think of that music, what your favorite song maybe is from it. And the last bit of thing I have is that there is going to be a Cruel Intentions pop-up premiere in NYC. Cruel Intentions was at the Rockwell here in LA.
So freaking
good.
And
I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard from multiple people it was amazing.
And the Rockwell does hear what they do. They do this unauthorized musical parodies, which are becoming huge.
So they use songs, right, that are... songs that already exist.
Yeah, and for Cruel Intentions, a lot of the songs they use are from the actual, like, soundtrack, Cruel Intentions soundtrack, which is so good. And then they used musicals from the time period. Like, there's a gay number to a... I think it's an NSYNC. It's either an NSYNC or a Backstreet... No, it's a Backstreet Boys song. The... You are my fire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they... I
mean... Just think, like, Moulin Rouge. Like, what Moulin Rouge did. That's kind
of
like similar.
I'll tweet out. I saw it, and I'll tweet out of the Broadway account some of the songs that they had there, so you guys can get a taste of that.
And like they already had one performance yesterday on February 11th. The next two performances, they're only doing three, are on the 13th and 14th. It's at Les Poissons Rouges, which is at 158 Bleecker Street. It'll be at 8 p.m. Tickets are going for $39 to $59, and you can buy those at lpr.com or at the Les Poissons Rouges box office. So two more shows of that. Check it out. Let us know how it is. If you were in L.A. and saw it and you have the chance to go see it in New York, like maybe see if it was different or what changes have made about it. But, yeah, it should be fun to go see.
And Unauthorized, they have it in Vegas now, too. Oh, so they have a Boz one in Vegas, which was their first one that they did. You guys, that stuff is going to be so big, you know.
It's already huge here.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that that's going to be, we're still going to have traditional musicals, but we're definitely going to be seeing more of these kind of things too.
They're doing Mean Girls now, mm-hmm. So I'm going to be going to see that in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so definitely check those things out. Let us know, like we always say, if you want us to do anything, please let us know and tell us what shows you want
to see. Which musicals you want to see, not just do anything.
Yeah, that is,
we'll have to draw the line.
Draw the line in some places. Where can they find you on Lost Time, Jackie?
123 Jackie B on all platforms.
And you guys can find me at BFIPS14. Also, Broadway Beatdown is our Twitter page, Broadway Breakdown is our Facebook page, and next week we will be doing Rent, the theater show, so definitely stay tuned and watch us then, and we will see you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only, not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners and principals.